Picture a workshop, sometime in the early evening. It is a small woodworking shop, the kind you might find in the back of someone's garage or in the corner of a barn, with a single bare bulb hanging from the ceiling and the smell of cedar shavings in the air. The walls are lined with pegboards, and on those pegboards, hung carefully on hooks, are dozens of tools. A long row of chisels, each one a different width, their blades catching the light. Several handsaws, with handles polished smooth from years of use. A planer. A pair of clamps. A set of files arranged from coarse to fine. Hammers of different weights. A jeweler's loop, of all things, hanging next to a heavy mallet. The owner of this shop has been a woodworker for decades. He could probably build a chair, or a cabinet, or a small boat, with his eyes closed. And here is the thing about him that anyone who watches him work for a while will notice. He never picks up the wrong tool. He never tries to use the chisel where he needs the saw, or the mallet where he needs the clamps, or the file where he needs the planer. He has a deep, almost wordless sense of which tool wants which job. When he reaches for a tool, his hand goes to the right one without him thinking about it. If you ask him about this, he will shrug and say something about how the wood tells you what it needs. But what is actually going on is much simpler. He spent 40 years learning, for every kind of job that came across his bench, which tool was the right tool. And along the way, he developed an even more important skill, which was knowing which tool was the wrong tool. That second skill, the skill of saying no, this is not the right tool, you should reach for something else, is what we're going to talk about today. This is Rust, Gently, a patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 6, what Rust is good at and what it is not. Over the last few episodes, I have been telling you, more or less, that Rust is winning. I have given you the adoption story, the companies that picked it, the numbers, the inflection points. All of that is true. But if I left it there, I would be doing you a disservice because the honest truth about any tool, including any programming language, is that being very good at some things means being not very good at others. Today, I want to walk through both sides of that, carefully, because the listener I am imagining is not someone who needs to be sold on Rust. The listener I am imagining is someone who wants to understand when this language is the right choice, and when it is not, and how to tell the difference. By the end of the episode, you will have the woodworker's instinct in miniature. You will know which jobs Rust wants, and which ones it does not. Let me start with the parts where Rust is, today, simply the obvious choice, and where the rest of the industry has agreed. The first place Rust now wins by default is in the world of databases and query engines, the systems that store, organize, and retrieve enormous amounts of data quickly. A new generation of these tools, with names like Polars and Data Fusion and Sail and TKV, are all written in Rust. The reason is that databases are, in the end, programs that have to keep moving second after second, day after day, with no pause, no stutter, no hiccup. A small, unpredictable delay in a database is felt by every program that depends on it. Rust's lack of a garbage collector, its predictable memory behavior, and its ability to hand-tune the layout of data in memory all turn out to be exactly what the people building these systems want. The second place is in the infrastructure that holds the modern web together. We already talked about Cloudflare's Pingora, the web proxy that now serves over a trillion requests every day. Pingora is one example among many. Another piece of software called Tokio, written in Rust, is the engine underneath a great many of the world's high-traffic web services, the part of the program that lets it do many things at once efficiently, the way a busy restaurant kitchen does. Network infrastructure cares about the same things databases care about. No pauses. No surprises. Steady throughput at scale. Rust delivers on all three. The third place is in developer tools, the smaller programs that programmers themselves use every day. There's been a quiet revolution in this corner of the world over the last 5 years. Tools with names like RipGrep, FD, Bat, Starship, Ruff, UV, and Helix have appeared, written in rust, and they have almost without exception turned out to be 10 to 100 times faster than the tools they replaced. A programmer searching through a large code base used to wait several seconds for a search to return. With RipGrep, it returns instantly. A Python developer linting their code used to wait minutes for the linter to run. With Ruff, it takes less than a second. These tools have spread throughout the industry simply because the speed difference is impossible to ignore once you have felt it. The fourth place is an artificial intelligence inference, which is the running of trained models to produce answers. Most of the work of training a large language model happens in Python, but the running of that model, once trained to produce text or images or decisions, has been moving steadily into Rust. Projects with names like Candle and Burn and the Hugging Face tokenizes library are written in Rust, and they are increasingly the default backbone of how artificial intelligence systems serve answers at scale. The reason, once again, is throughput. Inference is the kind of work where every millisecond saved is $1 million of compute saved at scale. There are several other domains where Rust has, quietly, become the default new choice over the last few years, and each of them is worth a moment of attention. Embedded systems is the world of software that runs on small, dedicated computers, the chips inside cars, medical devices, sensors, factory machinery, and the smaller corners of consumer electronics. Embedded software has, for decades, been written in C because the constraints of these tiny chips do not leave room for the helpful background processes that more forgiving languages depend on. Rust, with no garbage collector and predictable memory behavior, has begun to fill the same niche, with the added benefit that the kind of bug that can crash a car's brake controller becomes much harder to write. A framework called Embassy has made this kind of work approachable in Rust, and a growing number of microcontroller-class chips now have first-class Rust support. Cryptography is a related case. The libraries that protect the privacy of your messages, your bank transfers, and your medical records are, by definition, security-critical software, and a memory bug in a cryptography library is the kind of thing that becomes a global incident the moment it is discovered. The cryptography community has been moving aggressively to Rust, with new libraries like Russell's, which handles the encrypted connections behind most of the modern web, increasingly replacing their older predecessors. The same reasoning applies. Memory safety plus speed plus predictable behavior is exactly the recipe for software where the cost of a mistake is enormous. And then there is the world of game engines and graphics. A community of game developers, frustrated with C++ and unwilling to give up the performance, has been quietly building real game engines in Rust. A project called Bevy is, at this point, a credible game engine with a real community around it. A library called Wigpoo lets Rust programs talk to graphics cards efficiently. The work is early, but it is real, and it is one of the more interesting frontiers of the language. What ties all of these domains together is the same pattern we have seen before. Where the cost of a memory bug is high, where the cost of an unpredictable pause is high, where the program has to keep moving with no stutter, Rust has become the natural choice. That is the affirmative case. Now let me give you the honest other side. There are at least 6 categories of software for which Rust is, today, simply the wrong tool, and you should know about every one of them. The first is quick prototyping. If you have an idea and you want to find out in 20 minutes whether the idea is any good, Rust is not where you should write it. The careful checking that makes Rust so trustworthy in production is the same checking that slows you down when all you want is to scribble out a rough version of something and see what happens. Python or JavaScript or even a small shell script will get you to a working sketch faster than Rust possibly can. The borrow checker, which is the part of Rust that does most of the careful checking we have been talking about, takes a while to satisfy, and during the early phase of a project, you do not want a careful editor. You want a willing scribe. The second is being your first programming language. Rust is, by the testimony of almost everyone who has tried, brilliant pedagogy for someone who already knows how to program. It teaches them about memory and ownership and lifetimes in ways no other mainstream language does. But for someone who has never written a line of code, who has never sat with the simpler frustrations of a forgiving language, the strictness of Rust can be overwhelming. It throws too much at you at once. Python, or JavaScript, or even an old language called Basic will give you a gentler first taste of what programming feels like. Rust can come later, after the basics feel comfortable. The third is desktop application development. There are real Rust frameworks for building applications with graphical interfaces, with names like Towery and Slint and Iced, and they are improving rapidly. But the ecosystems around other languages are simply more mature. If you want to build a polished application for a Mac or a Windows computer today, the languages with more existing tooling like Swift or Kotlin, or even JavaScript through frameworks like Electron, will get you there with less friction than Rust. The fourth is mobile applications. Building an application for an iPhone or an Android phone in a way that integrates well with the rest of the phone's ecosystem is much smoother in the languages that those phones were designed to host. Swift for the iPhone, Kotlin for Android. You can use Rust for parts of a mobile application, especially the parts that need to be fast, and several large companies do exactly that. But Rust is not the language you start with for that kind of project. The fifth is one-off scripts. If you need a small program to rename 100 files in a folder, or to download a list of things from a website, or to do a tiny piece of data cleanup, the compilation step that Rust insists on is overhead you do not need. A few lines of shell script or Python will do the same job in a tenth of the time, and you will throw the script away when you're done. The sixth is interactive data exploration in notebooks. Python's scientific computing world, with libraries called things like Pandas and NumPy and Jupyter, is the place where many people now do their day-to-day work with data. There are Rust tools like Polars that are now eating into the lower layers of that world. But for the interactive part, the part where you write a few lines, look at the result, write a few more lines, look at the result again, Python is still simply better suited. The pattern across all of these is consistent. Rust is the right tool when the cost of a bug, or the cost of a pause, or the cost of running expensive infrastructure inefficiently is high. Rust is the wrong tool when those costs are low, and what you actually need is speed of writing rather than speed of running. Knowing the difference when you look at a project of your own is the skill that matters more than knowing the language itself. The woodworker's hand goes to the right tool because he has spent 40 years learning which tool is the right tool, and the same is true here. Over time, you develop the same instinct. You see a problem, and you know whether it is a Rust problem, or a Python problem, or a JavaScript problem, or a problem that wants a small shell script and nothing more. That instinct is what we are slowly building, episode after episode. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that Rust wins by default in databases, web infrastructure, developer tools, artificial intelligence inference, operating systems, embedded systems, cryptography, and games, because all of those domains pay a high price for unpredictable pauses or memory bugs, and Rust eliminates both. The second is that Rust is not the right tool for quick prototypes, for first-time programmers, for mobile applications, for desktop applications where smoother ecosystems exist, for one-off scripts, or for interactive data notebooks. Each of those wants a different tool, and reaching for Rust, there is mostly friction. The third is that being able to tell the difference in your own work is the skill that matters most, and that is the skill we're slowly building. Next time on Rust, gently, we will finally write our first program. One single line of Rust. We're going to spend an entire episode on that one line, because that one line carries inside it almost everything we have talked about up to now, and because the way we read it carefully is the model for how we will read every line of Rust we ever encounter again. It is, in a small way, the moment the whole show has been building toward. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.